We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan. I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that. Let's get it started. All
pelicans.
All the time.
Welcome to the show. The draft is actually still going on. We don't know what the pelicans are going to do with their next pick. We'll present it live during the podcast, but it doesn't matter because there's been a whole lot that's already happened, and the reaction has been extremely mixed. Michael, you're in three words, what is your immediate take on this trade?
No more tank.
Okay.
I mean, that's really all I got. It's so funny because people say they want one thing and then something happens and they want the other. I mean, I honestly understand both sides of this equation, and both sides could end up being right. I mean, we won't know for years down the line, but I constantly hear that there's no way that, you know, the Pelicans could attract a young, you know, all-star player in their prime to the city. And then Dell finds a way to get it done. I mean, a guy that I don't think anybody had on their radar as a possible trade candidate. And all of a sudden, you know, we're giving up far too much for him. To me, I thought that this move would be universally loved. And I'm, you know, again, I understand the other side, but I honestly don't agree with it, and I'm sure I'll lay out my reasons why in the podcast, but how about you? Put you back on the spot. Give me your three words.
You know, I should have been expecting you to turn this on me.
First of all, can you say his name?
Drew?
That's a win right there.
Right. I would probably call this not very exciting.
Wow, okay.
So the way I look at this is, there's a whole lot of like subtext to what just happened, but Drew is not a guy who anyone is going to be like drooling over. The prospect of seeing him play on this team isn't like unbelievable for me. I'm not like suddenly salivating to see next year. And I'll be honest, for the brief moments Nerlens Noel was on the team, like you said this before, the idea of those two guys together was pretty intriguing. And, I mean, you got to take all that with a grain of salt. He's not even going to play till December. We have actually no idea what he'll ever be. There's never, ever been a guy like him. And that's one thing that everybody has to remember. When guys are doing the statistical analysis of Noel, he does not rate with, and they cannot get a match for him because his physical profile is so different and his statistical numbers are so different. There is no real way to tell you what Noel is going to be. And I honestly, I mean, I have him as a guy who could easily be the bust in the top five.
Right.
Just being unable to do it.
You got a guy who's possibly going to be a bust in the top five, and then you also gave up a pick that you have no idea, you know, what it could possibly be. It's this mythical 2014 draft that, to be quite honest, very few of us have done any research on. We know the big names. We know Wiggins. We know Parker. But guess what? If the Pelicans land 1 through 5, they'll still be able to get those guys anyway. I mean, really what you're giving up is, if you're drafting 10th or 11th, you're giving up a chance at taking Willie Cauley-Stein or Glenn Robinson III or Gary Harris or, you know, some solid with potential upside guy that, you know, honestly isn't much better than the guys going 9, 10, or 11 here. It's a potentially superstar-laden draft at the very top, like 2003, but Dell has protection on that if the Pelicans luck out in the lottery or if injuries occur and they're back there next year. I really don't understand, you know, why it feels like we've given up so much in this trade. I could see if the pick was unprotected. And, you know, I'm not really thinking of this as Noel and the pick. He was one of the options. I'm looking at it as the sixth pick in a weak draft, whoever you want to say that the guy you would have taken there was, because I don't even think Pelicans fans are unanimous that they wanted Noel. I mean, it wasn't a very good reaction when we took him. Some wanted McLemore, some wanted Burke. So I just look at it as a sixth pick and then an unknown quantity. And there are things to pick apart in Jrue Holiday's game, like any guy who was – I mean, he's 23 now, but he was 22 the entirety of his season last year in the NBA. So you're picking about a 22-year-old's game. I mean, there's guys in this draft that are older than Jrue Holiday. So, you know, I hear this all the time where, well, Monty could take this guy's flaws and make him that much better. And then yet, now we're looking at a guy who was an all-star last year and a guy who put up impressive numbers, especially before Doug Collins quit on that team. And it seems like people are just saying, oh, this is the guy we're getting. He's not going to get any better. And we could have had one of these mythical creatures in next year's draft. I don't think that's a fair argument. Again, I hear people making it, but I don't think that that's a fair argument.
I don't either. And here's actually what I want to do. This will take a few minutes, so bear with me. But this is the reality of what we did tonight. We traded the sixth pick. And next year, conservatively, let's say the Pelicans make a small improvement, and now they're the 10th. They get the 10th pick. And if you're landing about the 10th worst team, you're stuck with the 10th pick, maybe the 11th pick. Okay, so we have now traded the 6th pick and the 10th pick for Jrue Holiday, who we'll get into him in a little bit. I don't think he's amazing, but in my book, he's top 10 point guard in the league. Okay?
Yeah.
So we have a top 10 point guard in the league for the 6th and 10th pick. Let's take a look at draft history at 6th and 10th picks for just like, I'll start in 2003, which happens to be in the running for the deepest draft of all time. That would be Chris Kaman and Jarvis Hayes, 6 and 10. I would take Jrue Holiday over Chris Kaman and Jarvis Hayes.
Yeah, and Chad Ford actually did a redraft of the 2013 draft about a week ago with hindsight, with the ability to know how everybody came out. And there were only 5 guys in that draft that were really, I mean, that were multiple-time All-Stars. And even, I mean, the 5th one was David West, who got there twice, in large part thanks to Chris Paul. So, I mean, even that draft, even if this draft turns out to be as good as that one, I mean, yeah, at those picks, you had guys like Kirk Heinrich and Nick Collison, et cetera, going, which you know, those are good players. I'm not gonna diss them. But what I will say is, has Dell had any problem whatsoever getting the Kirk Heinrichs and Nick Collisons of the world so far? Like, he could get role players in his sleep. The problem is, how do you go out and get all-stars, potential all-stars, you know, potential all-pro players? That's the part that Dell needs to do. He might have done it here.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I actually want to continue my little exercise here because I really want to drive this home. So 2004, which is supposed to be a bad draft. Number 6, Josh Childress. Number 10, Luke Jackson. 2005, Martell Webster, Andrew Bynum. So there's the first time I can actually say, hey, there's a decent player at 10, if you discount the fact he's only played a quarter of his possible games.
Yeah, the team we just traded with would disagree with you, but, yeah.
All right. 2006, this one I love. Brandon Roy, again, bad knees, injured out. And then Mohamed Sersin, our example and so many other of these things about big men around that draft pick. 2007, you go with Yijian Lin and Spencer Hawes. I mean, it keeps going. We didn't get rid of, like, unbelievable guys. The next one, 2008, is probably the best year. And I personally hate the guy at 10, though I know a lot of people love him. Danilo Gallinari at 6. And Brooke Lopez at 10. And so we can keep going. 2009.
And right around there was DJ Augustine. Yeah.
Johnny Flynn, Brandon Jennings. Would you take either of those guys over Drew Holiday?
Not. No.
Both those guys combined over? I mean, this is where I just don't get it. People always forget. I mean, I guess in 2010 you could say because Paul George was number 10. That was awesome. But they also got Ekpe Udoh, who doesn't play a minute for anybody at 6. It's a complete crapshoot. So we basically, if you just take a look at what I just ran down, 6 and 10 gives you about a 60 to 70% chance that you will get a rotation player in the NBA and about a 30% chance you're going to get a guy who could be an all-star. And we just traded those two things for a guy who I will actually grant, maybe not an all-star, but really close to all-star, and he's 22. He just turned 23 like a few days
correct.
Ago.
Correct. Yeah, and so I always like being as charitable to my opponent's argument as possible. I mean, that's first thing you learn in philosophy, so I want to do that first and foremost. I think our opponent's strongest argument would be that, well, you take Noel there, and then you suck again next year, and then at that point you're not talking about picks 6 through 10. You're talking about possibly getting 1, 2, or 3, where now you have absolutely no chance of doing that if Drew Holiday comes in. So that is, I think, the most charitable argument to how you could say that this could play out and the Pelicans would have a stronger chance for Wiggins or whatever, but I just can't see doing that to the culture of this team. I can't see another year in which every time somebody has a hangnail, you sit them down for a week. And players, I mean, Amin was on the podcast last week, and he just said it so well. Like, players could feel that. They know when you're not trying to win. It destroys the culture. It just creates, you know, something in your locker room that is not healthy. So, you know, in those terms, if that's their best argument, or, you know, I just can't buy that route anyway. I can't envision a scenario in which the Pelicans take Noel, let him rest however long as it takes, goes through another one of these tank years, first shot at Wiggins. Like, I just think that destroys the franchise way more than it helps it become the Thunder model.
Well, so I disagree with you on one respect. If the Pelicans, picking Noel would have been, and keeping him would have been a good start if they wanted to tank again and go after a 2014 talent. But then stop for just one second and really think about what we're saying. Because all season long, what we've been talking about is that Robin Lopez is not a viable starting center in the NBA. So we take Noel, we keep him. He doesn't play till December. It takes him a month to get in. The rest of the season he's playing, is he better than Robin Lopez or is he worse? You have to make that call in your own – you can make that own call, your own call that way. If he's worse, really, we're going to be relying on a guy who's worse than Robin Lopez for our future? Or he's better, in which case, unless we have replaced Al-Farouq Aminu with garbage, Eric Gordon plays the same level of garbage and, you know, plays less games, I guess, and somehow we've replaced Grievous Vasquez or not. I mean, the team was already in a situation where we couldn't even guarantee ourselves a top five pick this year. We got six. We were the fifth worst team in the league.
Right.
I mean, so basically everything we reloaded this summer has to have been worse or no better than equal to what we had last year for us to get six. We had a 50% chance of being fifth or better. I mean, this is ridiculous to me. Why would you ever try to make that risk? That means you completely, if you keep Noel, you completely handcuff yourself. If that's the path you're going to take so that you can become a horrible team and you're going to keep Noel so that it can happen, you cannot make any moves that improves the team otherwise at all, because you're just going to throw that all away. And do you think Dell Demps and Tom Benson want to do that? Not a chance.
Right. I mean, everything that you just said, this team this year was seven wins away from drafting 12th. I mean, you don't think with a healthy Gordon and whatever they spend on free agency, or even if they trade go whatever, the improvement of Anthony Davis, the non-substitute of Austin Rivers, I mean, he can't be that bad again. You don't think this team's at least seven wins better? So, I completely agree. If we're talking about, because I don't feel like if it was just for the 2013 pick, anybody would be debating this, or the 2013 pick and assets like Vasquez and Lopez, I think people would be on board. I think, you know, it is solely about this 2014 pick. And what I will say is that this pick is not much stronger after six or seven than, you know, most other drafts, even this one. You know, I just don't see that pick being as high as people thought it would be. So, again, I understand where people don't like it. There's also other things that come into play. I mean, Drew Holiday is, you know, $8 million more expensive than the pick if we would have kept it. So you're also talking about losing some flexibility in free agency. I mean, there's a lot of things here that you could point to and say – that it's not ideal, but to me, yeah, you get a 22-year-old point guard who just turned 23 that I understand if you look at all of his numbers from last year, they're not fantastic, but there was a crazy situation that went on in Philadelphia. I mean, for those of you who remember, Doug Collins basically just threw that team under a bus. They went through a ridiculous losing streak at the end of the year. Everybody had basically gave up on him. He had publicly come out and given up on the players. But prior to the All-Star break, you're talking about a 19-9 guy in Drew Holiday, a guy who I remember this specifically. I remember we played Philadelphia and Boston back-to-back because I remember being on the podcast, and this was before Rondo got injured. And I said to you, who do you think is better right now, Drew Holiday and Rajon Rondo? And we both agreed it was Drew Holiday. I mean, this guy was playing, you say top 10 point guard, I say before the All-Star break, and apparently the coaches agree, I think he was closer to a top 5 point guard in the league. I mean, he was playing fantastic. A bunch of crazy stuff happened in Philadelphia. You know, really didn't have much, if any, support around him, but just a guy that, as we break down his game, I really like. And again, I don't understand how everybody gives A, young guys the benefit of the doubt, and B, we just assume that guys are going to get infinitely better when they come and play under Monty. And I don't see people giving Drew that benefit of the doubt. I mean, he was already an All-Star. I think that it's just the arrow's pointing up for him. And I think when we look at the end of his contract by year 3 and 4, we're going to have one of the best bargains in the league. So,
and it's possible. I mean, so here's what I got to say about Drew. This is what the one reservation I have. I don't feel he's offensively much better than Grievous Vasquez as a total package. But defensively, he is a B-plus to Grievous's D-minus. So, I mean, and I'm a little unfair to Holiday because he is a better pick-and-roll player than Grievous Vasquez was.
I mean, have you ever seen Vasquez do any – I mean, Holiday actually has the foot speed to get by a human.
Yeah, and I mean, it is – but as a total package, Vasquez actually does – a lot of things that are pretty helpful. And Drew Holiday's one glaring weakness that holds him back pretty heavily, really, has been his free throws. I mean, he doesn't get free throws. He hits them fine, but he doesn't get to the line. He takes a lot of mid-range. He's even though he's a decent three-point shooter, he doesn't take a lot of them. So overall, his efficiency, the amount of points he gets per shot, is not fantastic. And his assist rating isn't tremendous. But I mean, the way I got to look at the guy, he's 22, just turned 23. That means in another 2 years is when he's going to be hitting his peak. So he's not near his peak right now. If you look at Philadelphia over the last, you know, 3 years, they have had some of the biggest dearth of offensive talent I've ever seen in my life. I mean, this guy's best players over the last 3 years were Andre Iguodala and Evan Turner as his offensive help. I guess Thaddeus Young, there's not anybody on this team who has ever been even a better than okay offensive talent that he's played with. I mean, just the upgrade from Spencer Hawes to Ryan Anderson alone is going to make this guy's life so much easier. And he's never had anybody who could roll down the interior like Anthony Davis can to play with. So his offense will probably be stronger than what he's shown. I'm just saying up to this point, it's not an amazing offense. But then you have to look at the reverse side of this. And offense, Grievous Vasquez, let's say C to C plus between the two of them. I think Drew Holiday's a C plus and Vasquez a C. You look at his defense, and Drew Holiday has been part of some of the tightest, nastiest perimeter defenses we've seen in this league over the last few years. And last season, they fell off, but up until that All-Star break where we're talking about, they were a top five defense. And they fell to 15 after that break Doug Collins just completely obliterated this team. And if you look at Drew Holiday's splits post that tantrum, he shot like 36% from the field. But before that, he was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, your coach completely quits on you as a team. Your organization comes out and says that the Andrew Bynum trade was the worst thing ever. And, you know, obviously the playoffs, you lose sight of that. That's no longer a focus. You go on this losing streak where hopefully a veteran or a coach pulls the team together, has a team meeting, and it's exactly the opposite. Everybody's just running for the doors when the fire starts. I really don't take the second half of that season into, you know, very much of consideration. And again, I mean, as we keep saying, Drew Holiday is younger than some of the guys in this pick, than, you know, quite a few of the guys are in this draft, quite a few of the guys that are about to get picked here in the second round. You know, he's improved practically every year in the league. Yeah, he still has things to work on, but coming from an organization like that, that was, you know, just absolutely crazy at the end there and has complete turnover to one that's going to have stability, you know, a team that obviously wants him and is willing to show that they want him with what they're willing to give up. I don't know what else that the Pelicans could have came out of tonight with. I mean, a lot of teams are coming out with guys that you know, fans are going to be excited about tomorrow, and they have all this potential in the world, and if they only do that, and if they only do this, they're going to be a good player. The Pelicans are coming out with a guy who made an all-star team last year, who still isn't, you know, hasn't even reached his prime yet, and by all indications has the type of game, the type of mentality, and the type of personality that, you know, Dell and Monty seem to crave. So, I'm really excited about it. You said you weren't all too excited about it. I think of this nucleus that the Pelicans are putting together. I think of the fact that they got, you know, the type of guy to spearhead their defensive attack that they wanted. And I honestly think about the Jrue Holiday that I saw in the first half of the year. I mean, he was one of the most impressive, not only point guards, but just perimeter players in the league to me that I saw in that first half of last year. I fully believe that the Pelicans are getting that guy and then some. And, you know, I think it's a pick that fans should be excited about, and just forget about the 2014 draft.
So, I mean, if you want to look at, like, point guards out there, and I said I think he's top 10, I mean, do you want to do, like, a quick rundown of point guards and see where you'd place him? Just, I mean, I'm trying to, like, make it so, like, people can, like, start feeling the kind of impact this guy could have. Because I think it's – people weren't thinking about veterans. And Philadelphia, honestly, how many Philly games do you think Hornets fans watched? Or no, Pelicans fans.
Yeah, I mean, not many.
A couple.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, watch a handful of them, but I mean, just right off the top of my head, we could go through lists or whatever.
I'll go down the list by PER of guys who point guards. Okay, so Chris Paul, clearly better. Westbrook, Parker, Irving, Curry, Darren Williams, John Wall, which is, I'm already starting to get into, probably not, Mike Conley, Rajon Rondo, Ty Lawson, and now we're into players like Goran Dragic, Eric Bledsoe, Kyle Lowry, and then Jrue Holiday. So that's just looking at PERs kind of thing, guys who are real full-time point guards. Of that list, I only went through seven before I was like, okay, now I'm to the point where I'm really questioning whether I would take, in just a vacuum, Jrue over this guy. And then I realize I'm considering that against guys who are 28 to 29 years old. So, I mean, this is a guy who is a top 10 point guard in the league, and has all the potential in the world, and could be better than that. So,
like, I'll put out a name that you put out there that I wouldn't hesitate on to give people an idea of somebody I know they're more familiar with. If you give me the option of Jrue Holiday or Ty Lawson, I am not hesitating for a second. I'm taking Jrue Holiday.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, to me,
it's close for me, but. Yeah, I mean, I would be torn either way. I mean, they're pretty much the same salaries, too.
Yeah, for me, it starts getting dicey when you're talking about somebody like Mike Conley. I think Conley, if I had to play a game tomorrow, I might take Conley and might, because remember, I'm throwing out the second half of last season. To me, it wasn't even close who the better point guard was the first half of last season between Conley and Jrue Holiday. So I'm thinking about on the Mike Conley level, but I think Holiday has more upside. And, you know, frankly, I would take him. So for me, my list, if you factor everything in, if you talk about the salaries that the person has, the age, et cetera, I'm taking Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, Tony Parker. Honestly, this one would be tough for me, and people are going to say I'm insane. Steph Curry would be tough for me. Again, if you ask me on
Twitter, really?
if you ask me, I'm trying not to be prisoner of the moment, because if you asked me on February 20th of last year, I wouldn't hesitate, or this year, I wouldn't hesitate. I would take Drew Holiday. And honestly, so would most people. But now we saw this run where Curry was able to avoid injuries and had this great postseason offensively. And now all of a sudden, you know, we're caught up in this moment without realizing, you know, they've been in the league the same amount of time, and Drew Holiday has played, you know, far more games, doesn't get hurt, plays both sides of the ball. So you start to get in that Steph Curry range.
And is 2 years younger than Steph Curry.
Right. I mean, to me, it would be tough. I would, because of the injury, and again, even in February of last year, I would have taken him straight up before Rajon Rondo without the injury. So for me, there's only five or six no-brainers. After that, you know, for me personally, Drew Holiday is in the conversation around six or seven as far as when you put everything together. If I were to draft a point guard right now, if the whole pool of NBA players was open, I think on my big board, Drew Holiday would be somewhere between six and eight.
Yeah. So it just happened. Pierre Jackson, 42. I'll be honest, no clue who he is.
Oh, I mean, I know a lot about him. It was actually it was one of the games I watched, Baylor versus Lehigh, in the opening game this year when I was scouting C.J. McCollum. Really, you know, good player, veteran guy, a senior. I don't believe at all that this is going to be the Pelicans' pick. I didn't believe when the trade was made that the Pelicans were going to keep this pick. We've seen Dell. Dell is allergic to second rounders.
So, he kept Darius last year.
Huh?
He kept Darius
last year. I mean, he wound up keeping Darius. I think that was the exception to the rule. I mean, he sold Josh Harrelson. He's traded pretty much every second rounder we have between now and 2050. But yeah, I mean, it's Pierre Jackson. If he's the pick, he's just another point guard, can't play any other position on a team that has Drew Holiday, Gravis Vasquez, and Brian Roberts as of right now, plus possibly given Austin Rivers minutes at the point guard position. I just, to me, there's no way that this is the pick. So
let's discuss the impacts of Drew Holiday, because I think this is the one impact. This is why I'm not excited. More than I don't find Drew Holiday to be like the player that I'm going to like be super excited to watch. This is what makes me the least excited about this particular trade. And you brought it up earlier, finances. So we have to be fair about this. $3 million was about what the pick would be this year if they had just taken six and sat on it. They also traded next year's pick. We don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to be a couple million dollars probably. So $5 million really is what we took out, is $3 million this year, another couple million next year. So Drew Holiday, is he better than Nerlens Noel, whatever we get next year at 10 or 11, and a $5 million player?
Yeah, because, again, I mean, I'll continue to say this. I think Dell Demps gets $5 million players in his sleep. I really does. I do. I think he gets $5 million players for $2 million and turn them into $5 million. I mean, I look back and I look at how he's gotten Bellinelli, Jason Smith, you know, people might even laugh, but Willie Green, Gustavo Ayon, Brian Roberts. I look at how he got these guys for little to nothing. I have no doubt that no matter what, Dell will always be able to go get us, you know, guys seven through 11 on the roster. I just think he'll always be able to get that. I think that the 2014 pick will be that kind of guy. I think that whoever we would have gotten the difference of salary would have been that kind of guy. So, you know, in my mind, the Pelicans traded whoever you want to imagine tonight with the sixth pick, plus two guys that Dell will be able to get down the line for for what I think is a top 6-7 point guard commodity and a guy that's trending up. I mean, again, this all goes to the belief of how you view the second half of the season for the 76ers last year. Because if Jrue Holiday keeps up those first half numbers, first of all, I don't see any way that he's traded. And secondly, if he is, I think we have to give up a lot more. So I take those second half numbers with a grain of salt, which weren't horrible. They were just not the elite 19-9 that we saw in the first half. And, you know, I take them with a grain of salt, and I'm remembering the guy that I saw. I should have really looked up when that game was. I think it was probably in late January. But I'm remembering the guy that I saw during that time frame, and that guy is worth, honestly, I think he's worth even more than what we gave up tonight. If I was putting together the type of players that I thought we could get, and I even did an article on this exact same scenario a couple weeks ago, let's trade the 2013 and 2014 picks, and I think Jrue Holiday is a better get than the guys I even put in those dream scenarios a couple of weeks ago.
Okay. So let's then talk about salary implications. First off, if you haven't visited it, Bourbon Street Shots, we have a salary central, and good old Jason Colmes has done a bang-up job with it. It has everything you need to know about the salaries for our team, including what's guaranteed, what's not, FAQs, everything's lit up. It's very, very nice, and it has a lot of information there about for the free agency and what kind of room we have as well. So if we add basically the $11 million, which is, you know, $8 million is the Jrue salary extra, we're still at we're basically have $45 million guaranteed to players, which means we're pretty much out of the running for Pekovic, wouldn't you say?
No, not at all. I mean, pure salary wise, maybe, but I've always thought the best way to go after Pekovic or a lot of these restricted guys is to go to Minnesota and say, hey, why do you want to pay him 12 or 13? You know, we could give you Lopez for five. I think you could go to Minnesota and give them, you know, Vasquez and Lopez. Maybe they move Vasquez elsewhere. Maybe they keep him because, you know, they might lose or trade Ridenour. You could still take those two and do a sign and trade, and per the rules of the CBA, you could basically go and get Pekovic. You could give him a four-year, $44 million contract, something like that, and then just do a sign and trade based around that. I mean, to me, there's still a ton of flexibility because there are no bad contracts on this team except for maybe and probably Eric Gordon. But other than that, there's nothing bad here. So if there's somebody that you love, you could work a sign and trade, or you could dump salaries. I mean, you could give away guys the same way that we gave away Jarrett Jack last year if there's really somebody you like in free agency. And that moratorium allows you to do that. It allows you to throw out a deal to somebody, and then they could come back and say, yeah, we'll sign that. And you don't have to sign them right then. Then, you know, let's say they agree on July 5th, you get to go work the phones and go move Jason Smith for a future first or second round pick, or, you know, find somebody to give you something in the future for Lopez. So, no, I think as long as you don't have just horrible contracts tying your cap down, I think the Pelicans have tons of flexibility, even though the guaranteed salaries say that we can't give out big contracts. The new CBA made it so much easier to make trades, I think the Pelicans could still do almost anything they want this offseason.
Right. And quite honestly, I mean, $45 million, if the cap is 50, it ends up being the 59 that's expected, you could still put – I mean, if we just have to renounce Robin Lopez and Lance Thomas and Terrell Harris, and we're basically able to put at least a $10 million contract down the table if you wanted to do that. There is still a lot of finagling that will have to be done because there's a bunch of other people that we have to we basically have to renounce, and if you do it in the right order, we can preserve different exceptions and things like that. But I just wanted to bring that up. Like, you know, we have lost a little bit of flexibility with this trade, but we can still go target any one guy. We're out of the running for Chris Paul and Dwight Howard. Not that we were ever in the running for either of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's completely off the table, but like you say, it was never really on the table. I look at the free agent class. I mean, even somebody like Iguodala, you know, Iguodala did play with Jrue Holiday in Philadelphia. You could go back to him and say, I think that it's more attractive for free agents now. I saw Mike Conley, and I know I just brought up his name earlier, but he tweeted right after the trade that he couldn't believe that Philly traded Jrue Holiday. Like, there's a lot of respect for this guy around the league. Now, instead of saying, oh, come play here for a 27-win team, come play here, you know, with a guy who was an all-star point guard last year and would love to set you up with, you know, Anthony Davis, an Olympic team member who is just now, you know, about to ascend. And I really, you know, throw in the new practice facility, the way that players seem to feel about Monty Williams around the league and the fact that he's going to be USA Basketball now. I mean, I really feel like there are tons of options open this offseason. Dell will have to be a little creative to achieve them rather than just going to a guy and plopping down a contract. But did we not see how creative Dell could be last year with the sign and trades of, you know, Gustavo for Ryan Anderson and then moving Jarrett Jack and getting that Brad Miller trade exemption and then getting Robin Lopez, like did a series of moves to go and get Robin Lopez for basically nothing. I mean, the guy is very creative. You know, he has flexibility because he doesn't really have any horrible contracts holding this team down. So I really believe that almost everything that was on the table prior to adding Jrue Holiday is still on the table right now.
McLemore, you at all sad we didn't get our hands on him?
No, I mean, just as I researched more, heard more, listened to more podcasts, read more, it seems like he is a guy that is very impressionable. Like, I'm terrified for him going to Sacramento. To me, I couldn't think of a worst possible place. He seems, from those who spoke to him, as a very naive kid, somebody who had a hard time growing up and, you know, is naive, is a bit of a follower. You know, that could be easily influenced. I don't know if we had the presence in our locker room to bring him in, and I don't know if Monty would have had the patience to give him all the time that it sounds like he needed and all the mentoring. I mean, I think this team is ready to go. It's ready to start winning. It's ready to, you know, really create a culture. And I don't think they had time for that. So no, McLemore, not at all. I mean, you know me, at six, the pick would have been CJ McCollum if I had my choice. So, do I think Jrue Holiday is a significant enough upgrade over CJ McCollum, who is close to the same age, to sacrifice a pick next year and some flexibility? Yeah, I really do, and you know I love CJ McCollum, but I think it's a massive upgrade.
So, I mean, I thought the beginning of this draft is absolutely crazy. Anthony Bennett going first, Cody Zeller jumping up to four. I was part of the initial knee-jerk reaction I had to this was, you know, just Noel falling all the way to six for the Pelicans to snatch. I mean, there's excitement there because this is the guy who's supposed to be number one. Everything you read about has him as number one. And even though they like all the analysis, he wasn't a particularly strong number one. He was still number one and he fell to the Pelicans. That was pretty exciting. But did you ever have even a moment's doubt that he was moving somewhere? Because I thought I actually was buying into it really quick.
I thought that there was a possibility that he would stay. I mean, we had heard of Oklahoma City offering a ransom to go up and get him. I was a little terrified that we would, you know, make a trade with Oklahoma City. I didn't really like a lot of their commodities. And if I am going to trade Noel, I don't want him to possibly come back and haunt me. Not that I think there's a huge chance he will, but, you know, I was thinking that maybe that could happen. But no, honestly, I thought the pick was going to be made, you know, for Noel. He obviously had the most value. You got to take him there, whether you keep him or trade him. But, you know, I really thought it was going to be a guy that we took. We fielded offers. Weren't going to get any kind of home run offers tonight. So you go into the off season, and then if you still don't get any home run offers, you go into next season and the year after. I really thought the way that was the way Dell was going to play it, partly because I had no idea that a team was going to be this bold. Like, that was the part I didn't believe. If you look at my mock draft today, I had Cody Zeller going 5. I thought he would go either 4 or 5, so I wasn't that surprised by that. I was surprised by Anthony Bennett, although, you know, I had heard that Mike Brown loved him. Apparently his Mike Brown's son did a recruiting trip to UNLV, and Brown fell in love with Bennett at that point, so I at least thought that was a possibility. I was absolutely shocked when I saw Drew Holiday's name. When I first heard it was a trade with the Sixers, I was thinking, okay, 11th pick, maybe Thaddeus Young, maybe, you know, a future pick, whatever. And then I saw Drew Holiday's name, and I couldn't believe it. That's really the first time all night I did a double take. I had no idea. I mean, you're talking about 29, 30-year-olds being talked about and offered for the third pick in this draft. Think about it. The rumors for the third pick in this draft were guys like Luol Deng, who's played 40,000 minutes, you know, at this point in his career, and Ersan Ilyasova. Those were the guys being talked about for the third pick. And now you're talking about the sixth pick being part of a package that gets me a 22-year-old all-star? Like, I didn't believe that at all. And, you know, it happened. So that was the first time I was really, really shocked all night.
Okay. So the only other thing I wanted to mention that's just flashed through my head at one point, when you brought up McLemore and the fact he's going to Sacramento, Tyreek Evans, any chance they bring him back anymore?
No, I mean, they there was actually a report that came out yesterday that said that, you know, the Kings just don't plan on matching anything. If somebody throws a big offer at Tyreek, they'd be willing to sign for the qualifying offer. But if somebody throws something out, you know, that they're not going to match. So I don't think Tyreek's going to be there, but I don't think the culture. I mean, Mike Malone is there. I mean, he's a decent start. But again, that's a first-time head coach who it looks like is already going to have a headache on his hands with DeMarcus Cousins saying, give me a max contract or trade me. Like, it's just not a very stable place. So I kind of feel bad for Ben McLemore. I mean, to me, this is when we should be making the projections. I think people are always saying, well, let's who is this player going to be? My thing is, I have no clue until you tell me where that player winds up. Because I've said this a million times. If Tony Parker goes to Sacramento instead of San Antonio, there is no way he is the Tony Parker we know right now. So, you know, tell me about where the player lands, and I'll tell you how he turns out. I don't think Ben McLemore is going to turn out to be the player he could have been, you know, if he actually went to a stable situation.
So this is a bit of fun. So my emphasis on how getting people to understand what Drew is based on reactions that I saw on Twitter. And I usually don't pay a lot of attention to Twitter, so now I'm kicking myself for doing that, because essentially, you know, Twitter is a place where people go to vent and make outrageous claims. So just so you know the poll that you put in the trade. Have you looked at the results yet?
I have not.
Okay, don't cheat. Don't go look at it real quick. Basically, it was rank the trade, grade it, A, B, C, D, F.
I originally had E in there.
Did you?
Yeah, that's how, I mean, I was trying to do 87 things at once after this all went down, and I just put A, B, C, D, and E, and thankfully nobody really got mad at me. A lot of people, well, not a lot of people, but a couple of people early on voted for E, so I'm glad that they took it easy on me, and I guess they at least knew what I meant.
So we already have 619 votes on the poll. What percentage do you think gave it an A?
What percentage do I think gave it an A?
Would you give it an A? It sounds like you would give it an A.
I would give it an A. If you had told me prior to today that, yeah. To me, it is an A. What percentage gave it an A? Okay, so there's five possible grades, so you would say 20% would be even for all. I'll say that 26% gave it an A.
59.45% gave it an A.
Nice.
27.95 have given it a B. And that means C, D, and F combine to be about 11%.
Okay, so we're just talking about a very vocal minority.
Most people seem to really love it. And that's, I like that. We're banging the drum for
something
for Drew Holiday, and people are like, shut up already.
Yeah. Tell it now. Now they're starting to hate him because we like him so much. It's like that episode of Saved by the Bell when Mr. Belding was teaming up with Zach, and then all of a sudden people stopped thinking that Zach was cool because he was with Belding. I don't know where I was going with that. Anyway,
I have no idea what you're doing.
But what I will say is, I think people are looking, you know, another thing I see is people are looking at it as who got the better end of the trade, New Orleans or Philly. Just because I think New Orleans, I would give them an A in this trade, doesn't mean that I wouldn't give Philly an A as well.
Philly did a brilliant job.
I think they did what was good for their franchise because they are in a time right now where they have to pull it all down and you know, strip it bare and tank for next year. Like they're
right.
We've been there the last 2 years. We can't do that again next year, you know, but they are in, you know, the same area where we were with the Chris Paul trade. I thought they did a great job. I mean, they walk out of this draft with Nerlens Noel and Michael Carter Williams, two guys that I do not think will contribute very much next year. You know, they freed themselves of a contract as they go through this rebuilding phase. I mean, Drew Holiday is the difference between 14 wins and 22 wins. Why are you going to pay him $11 million? And, you know, they got a decent asset from us. And, you know, more importantly, their pick is probably almost guaranteed to be top five next year. So just because I thought we got an A doesn't mean I don't think Philly also got an A. I really think this is the definition of a win-win.
Yeah. Last question I can think of for you. I don't think it actually matters because I have a feeling Gordon is not going to be on the team for this upcoming season. That might be hoping, wishful thinking, whatever. But let's say he's there. Do you think that they're a good match?
The only thing where I don't – so I usually start at where I don't see the match. Where I don't see the match is the perimeter shooting. I always thought that ideally you would want a very good, you know, almost maybe like a 40-42% three-point shooter next to Eric Gordon. Although I will say that Drew Holiday's spot-up shooting is very good. He shot 48% on his spot up threes last year. So, I mean, he is a guy that Gordon could drive and kick. That's the only place where I don't see the fit offensively. I mean, I think they could both play on the ball and off. Remember, Drew Holiday shared the ball with Darren Collison in college. He shared it with Iguodala the first couple of years in Philly, and he shared it a lot with Evan Turner last year, having some of the point guard duties. So he's not a guy that, that is ball dominant, that has to have the ball in his hands all the time. So, yeah, I definitely see it on that end. On the defensive end, if healthy, I think that is the best defensive point guard or defensive guard combination in the NBA. I think that if Chris Paul was still, if he still had his knees, you might be able to argue Paul and Bledsoe, which I still think the Clippers go into next year. I think Doc is actually a smart coach, and he plays those two guys together a lot more. I think maybe if Paul, if the knees weren't a problem, you could argue that. I think defensively right now today that I don't even know who else you could make the argument for that if healthy, that is the best defensive backcourt in the NBA.
Maybe the Pacers. Maybe. Or maybe the Grizzlies. Either of those are the only two I can come up with that I maybe.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And what's nice is you can switch these two guys easily too.
Oh, I mean, Drew Holiday covered a lot of twos last year, and Eric Gordon has covered one. I mean, and that was a big part of my evaluation is the versatility as well. Like Mike Conley cannot guard twos. You can't move him over there and have him guard twos. So the versatility combined with the quickness, the length, the IQ, I think it's head and shoulders the best defensive backcourt. And I think, again, if Drew Holiday plays like pre-All-Star break Drew Holiday, which I fully expect since he won't have a coach giving up on him, I think that is an awesome offensive, offensive combo as well. I really think if I were to look at the point guards around the league, I don't think when I consider everything that I could have found maybe more than three or four better matches for Eric Gordon.
Okay. Grievous Vasquez? Is it the end of Grievous Vasquez? Will he never be a Pelican?
See, I think it depends on what your offers for him are. I don't think you have to rush. I don't think you have to do anything right now. I think, he'd be fine. I could still see plenty of minutes to go around where he could get some minutes at the one, at the two, and the three. But I don't think you have to rush. I think, a lot of teams right now are going to be happy with their draft picks before they see him in summer league. I think a lot of teams are going to say, let's go out and try to get this guy in free agency, that guy, and they're going to strike out. And, Vasquez will have value. I don't think it's something that you have to do right now. If I had to bet, will he be on the roster on opening day? I would say no. How about you?
I would say no. And there is one thing I want to say. I've seen this from a lot of different people. I actually do like the idea of Vasquez if we don't want to really work with Austin Rivers anymore. Vasquez, I think, would be a perfectly fine third guard in a rotation. But what I never, ever want to see anyone ever say again is Grievous Vasquez will be our Manu Ginobili. Because that is so insulting to Manu Ginobili. Maybe this playoffs Manu Ginobili.
Right.
Like, he could be this playoffs Manu Ginobili, but he could never be the Manu Ginobili of previous season. Ginobili was a top three shooting guard. Give me a break. He'd be fine as a backup role, playing, swinging either positions. But even then, I mean, he's not perfect because I think I mentioned it. Watch the last finals, the finals we just watched. You can't have Vasquez out there. I mean, the only guy you could really have him guarding on the Heat was Mike Miller, and everybody else was going to torch him.
Yeah, and conversely, Drew Holiday is a guy who looks great in that type of series.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think, people think of Vasquez and he's a real thing because we watched him with our own eyes and we saw him blood, sweat, and tears. but really he's just a replaceable player. He did his part. He was better than Dan Dickow, but Dan Dickow got replaced when we upgraded our talent. Gravis Vasquez, it'll be the same thing. I'll be interested to see what we get. You would have to think that you kind of almost have to include whatever the Pelicans get for Vasquez, you know, into this trade in some way. The fact that acquiring Holiday allows you to move Vasquez would be something that you would almost have to include in the trade, just as you know, part of the entire puzzle. Again, people look at things in a vacuum, but this trade will have an effect in so many other ways. Other guys that get moved, you know, free agents that are attracted to this team because it's obvious, you know, what kind of mode that we're in. We're definitely going for the playoffs this year. So, I don't see Vasquez here on opening day, but I don't think that just because you made this trade, now you got to rush out the door and move him for whatever you can.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that's, got anything else you want to talk about this trade or the draft in general?
No, I mean, we'll be putting up more pieces. Free agency is going to be really, exciting.
Right around the corner.
Yeah. There's a lot of flexibility still there. You obviously see the direction of this team. You got this core, in place, and I think that this team that it's coming together. We heard Monty and Dell say about 7 months ago that this summer we would get our core and move forward, and that would be our team. I never imagined that we were going to add a 22, just turned 23-year-old all-star point guard to this core. You got Anthony Davis, who I know you're going to put out a piece soon that, you know, is going to tell people, look, this is the guy that's going to be the center of all of this. And now we're putting some real pieces around that guy. We have a real reason to cheer for next year and to be excited and talk about wins. You and I will not have to talk about the draft on this podcast at all next year. And I'm starting to get excited for that.
Yeah. We're going to have more in-depth data about Drew, of course, coming up. But here's one thing I just want to throw out there. We've talked about it all this season. You and I have mentioned this multiple times. If you look at this team as constructed right this moment, and you are willing to believe that Eric Gordon, because he actually tweeted he was pretty pleased with the Drew trade.
Oh, yeah.
If you actually believe that Eric Gordon can be a really viable part of this rotation, when crunch time comes at this moment, we have Drew Holiday, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, Anthony Davis, those four guys all on the floor. You just need to fill in a small forward with what money we have left. And you've also got Jason Smith, Robin Lopez, Grievous Vasquez, and Austin Rivers as your bench. That is a foundation.
Yeah, that's better than what Utah, in my opinion, better than what Utah put out last year. And they were, you know, in the runnings for the playoffs all year and just fell out on the last day. So that, to me, is a quasi-playoff team. It's way better than the Milwaukee Bucks, who made the playoffs in the East. I mean, And yeah, you don't know who that other pick is possibly, or you know, who that other player or players will be in free agency. Like I said, Dell has a lot of depth. He's going to look for value. We've already heard names like Chris Copeland out there, but I'll throw a couple more. Martell Webster, you know, Washington just got their small forward of the future. They still have Ariz under contract. Are they going to really put out a significant offer to Martell Webster? If not, he's a fantastic spot-up shooter.
And a good defender, too.
Yeah, I mean, good enough. And like I said, if you have Holiday and Gordon already out there. You have two very good perimeter defenders. You just need another guy who could hold his own, not get tortured and who can make rotations, who's smart. I mean, you add somebody else to this team, the Pelicans will have a lot of ways to do that. This is a really quality roster being put together with a very, very solid core. And I'm still not ruling out Austin Rivers coming back and, you know, being a very solid third guard next year. I mean, I'm not ruling that out. That would be gravy on top. Add whatever else you do, and you have this core of Drew Holiday, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, and Anthony Davis with a very, very good supporting supporting cast. I could really get behind that team. And
I mean, the more I think about it, you could, at the crunch time, you can go big. You could have Jason Smith, Anthony Davis, and Ryan Anderson out there. You can go small by moving Anthony Davis to center and putting whatever small forward into that role. I mean, we basically have four guys that we know would be very solid in crunch time.
Yeah, and I mean, the only other thing I do want to say is like I said, I assume that Pierre Jackson will not be on this team just because it's weird that the Pelicans took another point guard when that's obviously the most loaded position. But Dell has said in the past that he just takes best player available. I mean, he did that with Darius Miller last year. He had him rated as a first-round pick. And it's very possible. I mean, a lot of people thought that Pierre Jackson could be a first-round pick. This year was actually ranked 30th by DX. A couple of mock drafts had him going in the first round. For those, if we do keep him, I don't want to feel like we just haven't told, the listeners anything about him. I mean, he was a senior this year at Baylor. You might have even remembered him from their run in the tournament last year when they had Perry Jones and all of those other guys. Just a fiery point guard who could score, also, could really make plays for others. I don't love his shot selection, but he's one of those, sometimes irrational confidence guys, but a guy that, could just get crazy hot. I referenced that Lehigh game, and people talk about what C.J. McCollum did in that Baylor-Lehigh game, but Baylor won that game, if I remember, by 20-some-odd points, and Pierre Jackson just went off. I mean, this is a guy who definitely will be playing in the NBA, and he's one of those guys that could just be a fantastic spark plug off the bench. So I don't want to sell him short. I don't think that we are keeping the pick. I've just seen Dell move second rounders in the past, so I don't want to spend too much time on him. But if he is the pick, he's a guy that could definitely fill that role as a fourth or fifth guard if the Pelicans move Vasquez and decline the option on Brian Roberts and or trade either of those guys.
Right. I mean, for a very good team, he averaged 20-7. And you look at his shooting numbers, and they're not too fantastic this year, but his previous two seasons, he was pretty solid. And then what I like most about him is he got 7 free throws a game from the point.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it's still rate and percentage is at least high enough where you don't have to be worried that, he's not an athlete. The turnovers are a concern, but like I said, mm-hmm. at best, this is your fourth or fifth guard. He's a super Brian Roberts or even just Brian Roberts. It's a guy that perhaps Dell just went best player available. We'll know soon enough. It's going to be tricky because he's really technically not allowed to talk in specifics about the Drew Holiday trade until this moratorium is lifted, which won't be until, July 10th. So not going to get much information from Dell, but really what else is new?
All right, so everybody stick around, buckle up. This is just the beginning with free agency coming, and keep visiting Bourbon Street Shots for all of your Pelicans coverage. Thanks for listening. New Orleans is a party town. Ain't nothing but a party.